Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Having a catastrophic week? Well, hang in there, because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend, Jacob Redman. Jacob, how are you doing on this fine morning?
I'm doing good, Zach. You know, I look a lot thicker in person than I do in the plans. I'm feeling pretty good.
All right, that wasn't the response I was expecting, I'll be honest. But hey, nice joke to start with.
If that was the response you were expecting, I'm a little bit worried, actually, because anyway, that is thankfully not, I guess, in character for me, but. But we're not alone, you know, just like Azula has to have her two sidekicks. You know, I guess I'll be the Ty Lee, and then we brought a May along, or I don't know, maybe he wants to be the Ty Lee. But we brought with us Kevin Mahadeo. You know him from Everything is Super. Kevin, how are you doing?
I am doing great. And honestly, being a sidekick to Azula would be a dream come true. So I am all for that.
Nice.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Who would you want to be? Would you want to be the May or the Ty Lee?
Oh my gosh. I guess personality wise, especially when I was younger, I'd probably be more of the May. I was obnoxious. I was very much as a teenager in that, like, not quite goth, not quite emo, but definitely like, I'm an outcast. I'm so like, you know, just edgy and like, you know, I don't want to do all the cool things. Like, so yeah, May was very much of my personality type. That said, I've talked about it before, but I'm all about that Azula life. She's phenomenal. I love that character. She's so great.
This episode surprisingly didn't have too much Azula dialogue, actually, which on a rewatch.
Yeah. I was actually shocked by that as well, but it definitely had the other aspect of Azula, like, which is how badass she is.
Facts.
Yeah, she starts just like shooting the blue fire out of nowhere, and it's like, all right, this is great. I'm already here for it. I'm back home and I watched this with my baby siblings. And so they're really young. They've never seen the show before. And as they were like shooting fire, I was like, look, it's so cool. It's blue. And they're like, and they're like freaking out. I was like,
yes, great.
This is first time you're watching this and I get to live it with you.
Convert them. We did the same. My fiance, she has three nephews. They're pretty young, and we got one of them, the Avatar box set series for, their birthday. And so we sent it, and they blitzed through it. And I was just like, yes, convert them. Yeah, we'll be Avatar fans.
Exactly. Yeah.
The more, the merrier.
Yeah. Except for when they realize where's more of it. And we're just like, well, there's Korra, but you can't watch that one yet, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe they can wait a little bit, and the new Nickelodeon shows will be out. Maybe those will be good. So
I hope those are good.
I mean... There's that, and then there's also like the Netflix live action series, which I'm a little worried about now.
I'm a lot worried about it now, to be honest, now that the creators are not a part of it.
Once the creators like, we're leaving because the creative differences, I'm like, oh no.
I knew that one existed. I just try to like put that on my mind. I'm just
the right
like,
call.
No, let's just not think about it. But
yeah, we're going to be talking about the drill today, and it's coming off the back of some less eventful episodes, to say the least. Serpent's Pass and then the desert. Those two were not as action-packed as the drill in comparison. So I'm excited to dig into it.
Yeah. And Kevin, I know like you picked this episode. What makes this episode so appealing to you?
I think this episode, like you said, it comes off the back of some, I think, slower episodes. I do think that's purposeful, right? Because since this is a rewatch, most of us know what's, I'm not going to say spoilers, but needless to say, after this episode, there's some stuff that happens as it continues into the rest of the season involving the Earth Kingdom. So I think it's like a big, huge action beat to kick off the latter half of essentially this season. And I really like it because it's just such an interesting showcase for each of the characters, especially their skills and personality via the action. Certainly for the main crew, as I believe this is the first time they're being called this, but the Avatar Squad, Team Avatar.
Yeah,
I kept messing up Boomerang Squad. What was I doing? Team Avatar. I was just literally telling my fiance I'm so excited because this is the first time we get Team Avatar, and then I just messed up the name.
Embarrassed. Oh, good.
Anyway, so it's like the first Team Avatar reference, which is fun. Yeah. And you get some really cool beats, especially with Azula in there, who, as mentioned, I love that character. So any episode that has like a heavy Azula presence, I really wanted to do. And this, I felt like it was a good one. It was either going to be this or the chase. And so I think I ended up on the drill because I was like, this is a cool one to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I feel like, so the library is like kind of like a mid-season break. Mm-hmm. And then like after that, you get like two episodes where it's kind of like, you know, advancing the plot, biding your time. And then like, this is the one that's like, okay, now the pieces are in place. Like we know where we're going for the rest of the season, and it gets pretty exciting from here. So yeah, maybe we can jump right into it. We start like right after, like a few seconds after the last episode, with like a bunch of these tanks that are super intimidating, just like making their way to the outer wall of Ba Sing Se. And then we see this gigantic drill. I tried to look up the world record for the biggest drill and I couldn't really find it, but I have to imagine this wins. Like I have to imagine.
I would love to know how you would calculate the scale. Like, would you assume, okay, Aang is this high, so therefore, like, it just feels like a TikTok moment, because there's people on TikTok who take small detail and measure out the actual length of something. So I'm imagining you now, like, okay, if Aang is approximately 5'2", then that means if you take the drill and then multiply it by this, you get the drill. Like, I just love that image.
How big did you guys think the drill was? It looked like 20 feet tall or something.
It's got to be way taller.
Because
when Aang and Azula are falling down later in the episode, it's like 50 Aangs. So
true.
50 Aangs high. It's
50 Aangs high. So 250 feet, if my math checks out. So tall. I could not find the record, but I'm going to say this one wins. We see, like, not only does it, like, it's a drill, but it's kind of like an inchworm. Like, instead of just moving forward, it like inches, it locks into place, and it like extends. Like, I don't know. The mechanist kind of fell apart here. I feel like it could have just been on wheels. Like, why is it inchworming its way across the desert?
Well, I think, one interesting thing about this series is that they really take time to like develop how these machines work in this world, right? Because this is a world that generally doesn't have a lot of it, because so much is done with bending. I mean, even this episode, we see the trains work, through earthbending. So part of me likes the idea that like they are trying to figure out functionally how they could take something this big and make it move such a distance, because they probably couldn't build like those long stretches of like threads, like how you have on tanks. Right. So like, I like that interesting idea of like, it moves almost like a worm, because it's like, that's the only way that they were able to build it to function it, because they're not used to building things like this at all.
Yeah. I mean, that is true. Just imagining like the treads that would have to be on the drill is like, that's a lot. But I did like that it's like an inchworm here. I also love, like, we go to the top of the drill and we see like, it's Azula at the helm, just like chilling there and just like laying back, taking in the sights. It's a great intro.
And then later on, we get Ty Lee on navigation duty. And I'm like, what the heck's going on here? Why is Ty Lee the one looking at dust clouds from the top of the head?
Yeah, especially the easily distracted one. Who do we want keeping an eye on stuff? Ty Lee, she's easily distracted. Wait, what? No, opposite. We don't want that. Yeah,
exactly. At least she's enthusiastic. Like, I feel like if I want someone like on navigation, I want someone who's like excited, like wanting to be there. Like that's what I'm looking for. So, you know, Ty Lee can navigate for me any day. But then we meet this like war minister. Like, this guy, I feel so bad for him. Like, you know that Azula at some point is gonna like have him deposed. I don't know if it's this or there's another breaking point, but he's not long for this world.
Nah, Azula's gonna have him like Agni Kai'd and like dead probably after this. But yeah, War Minister Ching, I think his name is. He calls the drill a feat of scientific ingenuity and raw destructive power. So that's a pretty apt description for the drill.
Yeah, and I guess the mentality of the Fire Nation.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, and we see then like Ty Lee's pointing out all the earthbenders that are like standing near the outer wall. And like they look like specks. And so like when the War Minister's like, oh yeah, like we're fine, like they're not going to be able to hit our metal shell. I was like, yeah, like these people are like nothing. They're not taking it down. You're fine.
Especially even, I mean, like, oh, that's another thing that's always interesting, which we'll get into once the action really breaks down, is that like there's so many people that are benders in this world and are really good at it, but it takes a certain type to even stand up against a lot of these, like the Earth Kingdom, and like these earthbenders, I'm sure they're great. They ain't no Toph. They're not going to be able to do what Toph does, because Toph is over there in, like, you know, mentioned the library is one of my favorite moments, where it's just like, oh, what's Toph up to? Oh, you know, just holding up an entire building on her own. And it's just like, yeah, like, you know.
Yeah. Single-handedly holding up like the Library of Alexandria equivalent, like this massive building. She's just like one-handed. She's like, I got it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the most impressive feats of earthbending in the whole series, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and then here we see like a bunch of sad earthbenders, because Azula's going to say like, all right, Mei and Ty Lee, like, just go ahead and take them out. And like, this is just insult to injury, because like they weren't going to be able to do anything anyway. But to send Mei and Ty Lee after him, just like, all right, let's just like put them out of their misery. And Mei, I love this for Mei. She's just like, finally, because she's just so bored. She's like, anything. Like, I would love to fight some, like, you know, elite earthbenders.
Yeah, she's such. This is why I mean, season two for me is so great. Season one is really, really, really good, right? And it gets better as it goes. But season two, I think, is really where the show hits its stride, because one, it introduces Toph and a lot of the other characters, but also, yeah, introduces Azula, Ty Lee, and Mei, who are just such fantastic characters and representations of the Earth Fire Nation, which we haven't seen as much of in this way, especially with obviously Azula's connection to Zuko. So it's just really fun to like see these personality types and see them interact and see them deal with stuff. Like, yeah, I love that Mei is just like constantly bored, and it's just like, just give me something to do. I just need some excitement in my life. Yeah, I'm rich and bored. What do you want from me?
Well, and that feels exactly like how Toph is. Like Toph, also rich and bored, is just like, like, please just give me something to do. Like, fine, I'll go help the Avatar. Like, as long as I get out of this place so I can bend. It's actually, I've not noticed the parallel between the two rich and bored characters that we have. anyway, so then, like, next thing we see is the Team Avatar, as they're about to be called, is, like, walking up to Ba Sing Se, and Aang comes on down, and he's like, oh, yeah, like, I was gonna get Appa, but something was larger, and I had to wait. And, like, Sokka's like, what's larger than, like, finding Appa? And it's like, well, it's, like, it's right in front of you. So they go up, like, they earthbend up the outer wall. And Sokka's like, yeah, okay, this makes sense.
I'm honestly shocked they couldn't hear that. Like, that was my one thing. It's like, I understand, like, obviously scale, right? Like, they're going through a pass. Like, there's, like, high stuff on the other side. You would think they would hear that, like, like, drill just not too far away from them. They would have been like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, especially, like, in an echoey cannon. It's just, like, total silence, and then it's just, like, as it's going through. That's a good point. I had not thought of it.
I like your guys' sound effects. Thanks.
We've all done our drill, and none of them are good, but they're all
bad.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Continue, Jacob.
Well, I thought last episode I was annoyed at Aang that he's like, I'm going to go find Appa, when like they were literally saying like, oh, there's something the Fire Nation's guarding to the west. Like, if he didn't go, it'd just be irresponsible. But now I didn't even think the fact that he could have just heard it. Like, he should have just like been like, what was that? What's that? Oh, a loud drill?
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, if Gus ever went missing, if my dog ever went missing like that, I'd be like, I got no time for anything. I got to go find Gus. I don't care about there's a world to save. My dog is missing.
That is good to know.
And Gus can't even fly me around.
Yeah, way less utility. Yeah. Stay away from Kevin's dog. That's intimidating.
I will John Wick you.
Yeah, John is going to say you'll go full John Wick. Oh, dear. Yeah, so then they get up there and they see. And then we get this like earthbender soldier. This general that they introduce him to is quite the character. He's got like he's got all kinds of personality, way too much personality to be at this outpost. We meet General Sung. What are your thoughts on General Sung?
He's an ignoramus, is what he is. To use a politically correct term, he's just not a smart guy. Like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, yeah. He is not great. Like, he's got that, like, obviously, like overconfidence of just, like, and even his overconfidence gets shut down so quick because he's just like, oh, you know, these walls are impenetrable and, like, no one has crossed them. And Toph is just like, the Dragon of the West definitely has. And he's like, well, this is temporary. And, like, his one good thing, and I shouldn't even say this is a good thing, is it's not called Na Sing Se. And then he explains. That's Penetrable City, and I'm like, thank you for that explanation.
That joke,
your joke.
That joke killed me because he like I've seen this before, and I should remember like the dumb jokes, but for some reason the dumb jokes don't stick, and these are the ones I appreciate the most. Like just like in last season when they're like, oh, Aunt Who? No, Aunt Wu, and it's like
it's so stupid, joke, but you're just like, no, that'll do. I got it. It's great.
This is the other one that had me laughing so hard, and my baby siblings are like too young to understand that was funny, and so I started laughing. And they just looked at me. They're like, what? Like, straight face. Because I was like, get it. It's like, Na Sing Se means penetrable. And they're just like, what are you talking about? Like, they just, yeah, no idea. Anyway, they miss a great joke.
Yes. They're going to appreciate it when they're older.
Yeah. Zach, are you sad that now I'm going to bring this joke up for the next, like, 3 weeks?
No, I'm pretty used to it. The Aunt Wu thing lasted for like 5 podcasts. So
it's a hilarious joke.
I mean, it's a solid joke. I mean, I'm not hating. And then we get General Song talk. He says he's going to send the Terra team after or towards the drill. And then this is where the seeds of Team Avatar are sown because Sokka's like, oh, Terra team. Very catchy.
Yeah, I get that. Like, it's a clever name, I guess, because it's like Terra, like Earth, like, okay, sure. In like alliteration, it's fine. But like, I feel like you could come up with something better. I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of Terra Team. I'll put it.
Yeah. I mean, at the same point, this guy is clearly not great with wordplay. So I think like Terra Team was probably the best we're going to get from him. But like, yeah, comparatively, you can see the difference in naming mechanisms where Sokka's joke at the end, even beyond Team Avatar, which we'll get to, I think is way better and funnier than like Terra Team. But I think it's just like that seed of an idea for Sokka, who's way better and way smarter than this guy. And that's an interesting showcase of that, where Sokka's like, oh, Terra Team, that's not bad. And then just like, I'm going to think of better ones for us, you know?
Yeah. I think my favorite part about General Sung is like the things that he had on his arms, like the dragon shoulder plates. Those look pretty cool. If I could wear those, if I could pull them off, I would. I don't think I could, but
I feel like it's like it's really weird. But like, yeah, those heavy cloaks, we've sort of seen the same. I'm trying to think timing wise, but yeah, that was season one with Bumi, right? Because like Bumi had the cloak and like hunched over, and then once the cloak comes off, he's like Dragon Ball Z style, just standing up huge and jacked. But like this guy's not that. And for a moment, I'm like, is that this? And it's just like, oh no, he just wears this heavy cloak, and I guess it's just worn him down, and he's just constantly like hunched over now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be pretty impressive if, like, at the end of the episode, he just was like, all right, time to throw off the cloak, and he just became, like, a King Bumi-esque person, but that would not match. Like, Bumi's just better. He's just a little different.
Like, legendary character in this.
Yeah, for sure. Then we see, like, one of the worst attacks in terms of, like, effectiveness. The Terra team launches an attack. I think their idea is actually pretty good. They launch a bunch of wedges into the side, so they have, like, a bunch of on either side, they have like a bunch of spikes going into the metal drill, but the drill is just like not about it. It like expands, and as soon as it does, it just like cracks the earth. It kind of makes like snow out of the earth and like turns it to small little dust. And yeah, the Terra team just is screwed. Even more screwed by the fact that Mei and Ty Lee are on their way. They make really quick work of this.
I love it. Just like it's one of those cool things that, you know, the characters, like I mentioned, they're relatively new for this season, but every time we see them, it really is a great showcase of the threat level of Azula, Ty Lee, and Mei, because it's just like, they talk about like, yeah, these are elite Earth Kingdom fighters, and they just like wreck them. It's not even a contest. Like the eliteness of these characters, it's crazy, and yeah. I love it.
At one point, Ty Lee is surrounded by like all the bodies of the of the earthbenders that she took out. And it's like, wow, there's like just 20 bodies strewn about. And it's like Ty Lee and May took out all of them pretty much.
It's a very impressive body count. She just has like a circle of people around her, falling around. And like even like the May, like as she's going down the side of the drill, just like throwing like chic like shurikens is just like so cool. Like it's amazing. I love it.
They're awesome. And I really like also like the almost variety of the personality, obviously, between the three of them. But it's also the show does a good job of also subverting a lot of like certain expectations. Right. Like I think May's character being, you know, that like kind of like bored, like really just wants excitement in life. But like presented in this way is different from stuff we've seen before in this realm. And even Ty Lee. Like, usually when you have a character who's like Ty Lee, who's out there and can just beat up a bunch of, like, people and knock them out, they're closer to personality to, like, Azula, right? They're more like that, like, oh, I'm the, like River from Firefly, which I love River from Firefly. Let me just clarify that right away. But it's more like the silent and, like, you know, just, like, badass and, like, you know, strong person, I'm doing air quotes, personality type. Versus this, which I think is really interesting. You have someone who could just wreck shop across these Earth Kingdom people, and she's just this bubbly, fun, you know, easily distracted person. I think it's just such a cool contrast of character, and just showcases how clever the show is to like do interesting stuff and not just do the typical character work.
Yeah, it is cool. Like she, you know, takes out everyone, and then she just wants to go and like, I don't know, like trapeze or whatever. Like she's just like, like it's not your typical like quiet brooding assassin. Like, I feel like the personality like of Longshot might be in like the typical character here, where it's just like, I'm going to take everyone out and then I'm just going to like not speak again. Or like Azula, like I'm just going to be very aggressive. But the like, oh, I'm just a very happy person that happens to be able to kick everyone's ass.
Yeah. And even May has personality quirks, right? She does not want to get dirty. Like there's a lot of stuff with like May that has personality quirks that isn't just surface level. There's all these little things that define these characters. And another reason why I like this episode especially is because I think this interesting showcase of the characters across all sides.
Yeah. That's for sure true. Well, after they like wipe out the Terra team, General Song like realizes that they have no hope. Like the Terra team is not what he thought they were.
So quick and ready to surrender. Those guys are worse.
Yeah, he tucks his the tail between his legs. Is that the expression? Tucks his that sounds right.
Tail between his legs. And you know what's funny? I have that in my notes as well. It puts his tail between his legs and goes up to Aang, because then they offered to help earlier and he said they didn't need any help, but he was absolutely wrong.
Zach, the reason why I know that expression is you've said it a few times. It's like I know it in the like general like I know it sense, but I've never used it. But because like I podcast with you and you've said it before, I like that's why I had that one in my notes. So
that's I use a lot of generic like I don't know like old white people phrases I call them, where it's like you don't hear them in the general like nomenclature, but.
My fiance uses so many old white people phrases. She's huge on using them. Okay, I'm constantly just like, what are you doing? Like, this is like 1920s at best here. What's happening?
Glad I'm not the only one.
She calls people rabble rousers, and I'm like, rabble? What are you doing right now? Yeah, she's ridiculous.
Wow, that one really is old. Do any of them rub off on you? Have you found yourself saying them yet?
No, I mean, sometimes to like make fun of her, the one that she's trying, and it's not even like, old, but it's just like, she has taken a stance is she's trying to bring back the word pop because she's from the Midwest. And so she's like, I'm going to call it pop. I was bullied out of calling it pop and to call it soda since I left Indiana and now like from New York and everywhere else. So I'm bringing it back. I'm calling it pop. And I'm like, no, we're not doing this. And she keeps trying to do it. And at one point, she was just like, I'm going to make some pop in the soda stream. I mean, pop stream. I'm like, that's a branded product. You can't replace pop in that one.
Yeah. That is very funny. I would actually like to officially join that cause, though. I would also like to start calling it pop. For a long time in my head, that's what it was called. And then people were like, you mean Coke? And I'm like, fine, I guess that's what I mean. So. I'd like to also call it pop.
No. The other people listening to this podcast now, I've actually accidentally caused an actual organization to be formed here now. Oh, no.
Exactly. Zach, where do you fall? What do you call it?
I call it soda, but I mean, I've heard it called pop before. Every time I hear pop, I just think of Magnitude from Community. You know, the pop. That's what I always think of. So every time I hear pop, that's where my mind goes myself.
And isn't that more fun than when you think soda? When you think soda.
True,
like,
true. Boring. There's no like soda phrase or anything like that. No, there's no Magnitude. So
exactly.
I just think also like dirty pop, like what is it, NSYNC in the like early 2000s.
Yep. Anyway, back to the avatar of it all. So now like General Song is like, yeah, I definitely need help. He tucks his tail between his legs, as we covered, and Aang's like, all right, yeah, I got you. Let's help out. So how are we gonna stop it? All of them are just like, cool, Sokka, what is the plan? They just all look at him, and Sokka's like, why are you looking at me? And then Sokka's the idea guy. Yes. I feel like every group has to have one.
Every group does. And I, again, another thing I love, because like, he really is. Like, when you look at the series, Sokka has been the idea guy. He's come up with plans. He's really clever. And he doesn't have, like, you know, the earthbending abilities. He's clearly a decently capable fighter, but it really is, he is a strategic mind and also a ladies' man, as we'll get to. But, like, he has, that's the thing. And I love that they point it out here and they bring it out, because I feel like I try to always think back to, like, when I first watched it, which was so long ago now and, like, several rewatches ago. But, like, in my head, I feel like I remember seeing this part, and when he says that, it's just like almost like a click where it's just like, oh my god, they're right, he totally is, though, like he's done this. And I remember there's one point, and I don't remember if it was before this or after, but like there's a point where Sokka's looking at something and he's just like a pause, and he's just like, I have an idea, and my friend next to me is like, of course you do, that's your deal, dude. And like we're just really excited about it, because it's like that is Sokka's thing. Like I love that it starts here, basically, that complete recognition of like Sokka's abilities.
Yeah, yeah, and like he's constantly coming up with the ideas where it's like, oh yeah, that is clever. Like that is a really good way to do this. Like I think back to the Avatar Roku episode where he like creates a fake explosion so that it looks like they've already opened up the fire or the fire temple, so that Aang can then sneak in. Yes. There. And like, I never would have thought of that, but as soon as you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, that's low-key genius. Like, yep. You are so smart. So. Yeah, he's not just the idea guy. He's also the complaining guy, which I feel like a good group also has to have. Yeah.
That's me. I'm the complaining guy. You were going to ask, good to, right? Know.
Yeah. I was not going to presume. I was just going to ask, what type of role do you fill in your friend group?
Yeah, I'm more complaining, of the complaining guy than I am the idea guy, for sure. What about you, Kevin? Are you more the idea guy? Are you more the complaining guy?
I feel like in my friend group, I'm definitely the complaining guy. In my job, I'm literally the idea guy, because I am a strategist. So nice. It's really funny to see that contrast come to play here.
Nice juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just Sokka. You're just the two coins, depending on the context.
I've got two out of three, right? I got the complaining. I got the strategy. Not much of a ladies guy. I got my one, and I'm very happy about that. But prior to that, it was not doing great. So,
well, okay. Sokka pulls way more than he should be able to. Like, it is actually incredible that people are interested in Sokka when the avatar is like literally 5 feet from him. But that's just fine.
Sokka in the universe must be like the most handsome man to ever exist. He must be like the Fabio of the Avatar: The Last Airbender universe.
Fabio is your definition.
No,
of beauty,
or like, not, or like the generic like handsome person. I don't know. Like, Fabio's not somebody I think is handsome, but that's what like general pop like culture people presume is a handsome man. So
it is.
That's where my mind went.
Yeah, he's sort of become that because he's not. I think like now you got like your Hemsworth. I think Chris Hemsworth is like the new like and viable like that one. I'm like, yes, that makes sense.
Yes.
But I don't know. I mean, it's the personality. I think there's a lot with Sokka that he has going for him. Like, I get it. I understand. So, like, it tracks that, like, so many people in the world of Avatar are, like, all about Sokka.
Okay. That's good. I don't see the appeal, but maybe
ridiculous.
Maybe it's because I complain too much to where, like, if we were together, it'd just be like... We'd just be off in the corner and we'd just be like, nah, these people, they're annoying. And then we just stop interacting with others. It's not great. Anyway, we go back to the ticket woman, actually. Now we're going to see Zuko and Iroh. And this is where we see a bit of a ladies' man himself. You know, the ticket woman's giving them a little bit of a trouble there. They're like, you know, getting annoyed. Iroh corrects his name, saying it's Mushy and not Mushy. And the woman's like, are you saying how to do my job? Like getting all mad.
And that was so weird to me because it's like, that's not part of your job. It's just correcting the pronunciation of the name. What does that have to do with your job?
That's fair. Yeah. Like he didn't say like, oh, now you stamp my passport. Like that would be telling you how to do your job. He's yeah, like, exactly. This is how to pronounce my name. And she's like, I don't care. Yeah, but he's smooth here. I got to write this down. He says that she's like flowers in bloom. Her beauty's intoxicating. Oof, I'm getting a little heated over here myself.
I mean, listen, if we're talking about like the dudes of Avatar, like Sokka's great. But once you throw Uncle Iroh and Zuko in the mix, it's like there's no more contest anymore, guys. Like we're wrapping up everyone else. Like Iroh is so great. I mean, everyone loves this dude and he is just so nice and the smooth talker and, you know, like the goofy uncle, obviously, but also like so much heart. Like, yeah. Iroh can get it easily, I think. And obviously, I mean, who doesn't like Zuko? That's unfair for most people.
Especially like shaggy hair Zuko in like season 3, like that. Because yes. Like ponytail Zuko's like, fine. Like short hair Zuko, like, okay, like you don't have the best do, but shaggy hair, oof.
Yeah. It's different. Yeah, my fiance was very much just like, oh, huh, okay. Like, it is a different, it's a different Zuko that shows up, and he's phenomenal. Like, I'll save it for ideally coming back on the podcast again, but Zuko is my favorite character, and his character journey is amazing, and you could track that with his hair.
Yeah, that's true. Again. Zach, what's your favorite hairdo of Zuko's?
Well, my least favorite by far is like bald ponytail Zuko. I think shaggy hair is the best, but I don't mind short hair season 2 Zuko as well. I think it's a fine haircut. Lee's haircut. Speaking of Zuko, he really didn't enjoy the flirting. He's like, I'm going to forget I saw that. He was just disgusted by it. And it's kind of true because this woman, she's got like a mole with hairs on it above her eyebrow. She's like, not the most handsome lady, to say the least. So
no, her beauty is intoxicating.
Oh, my bad, my bad. Yeah, her beauty is definitely intoxicating.
You also, what it's like, saying? I mean, like from the outside perspective, you're just like, ooh, Iroh. But like, it'd be like if I saw my dad flirting with someone, I'd be like, no, stop it, stop. Yeah. You know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
My parents are divorced, and whenever my mom like talks about flirting or something, I'm just like, nope, don't need to hear any of this. And so.
So my mom was like talking about how she wants to go on a date again. And I was just like, I was like, I would love that for you. And do not ever tell me like, yes. I would love you to be happy. And I would not want to know.
Exactly. It's just like, I'm happy for you. I love that journey for you, to quote Alexis from Schitt's Creek. But I don't need to hear details or anything beyond certain stuff besides like, I like this person. Great for you. Good. Great. Yep. Awesome. Like, happy. Great.
Love it. Perfect. Good enough. yeah. Then we see Jet, and like Jet in this episode is just like kind of a pest. He's like around enough to be like annoying. But anyway, he's like, oh, I think Lee's going to be a good freedom fighter. Like we got to try to get him. And like, he knows obviously that he was hurt by a firebender from the scar on his face. And so, he's trying to convince the rest of them that they could use Lee. And then, like we get one of these moments, we got them last week. This is just annoys me. I want to know your thoughts, Kevin, when like there's a character that's silent and they like give a look, and then they're like, Jet here is like, oh, I can respect that. And it's like, I don't know. I don't like the whole like trope. It's like, oh, you're silent, but you say so much.
Yeah, that's one where I do think it exists in the air, and it exists everywhere. There's things where it works, because I think the functional version of this is the speaks different languages but still understand each other thing. Like, sure. The Chewie and Han is a classic, right? I'm okay with that, where it's just like they understand each other. It's totally cool. And like, just with looks or like simple words, it's just like you see the response. I think that's fine. But like, where's just a silent character and gives a look, and it's like almost like a full sentence. I'm just like, I don't know. You could have made him have sign language or something too. I don't know, just something that it could work. But he does talk. He's not mute. He will talk, you know, at certain points.
Yeah, it's just like there's so much said, and like I guess it's like sure in Star Wars I can only speak like galactic normal or like whatever like the theory is there. But like so fine, I can't speak Wookiee. But here it's just like it's just a silent look, like a blink of an eye, and it's like yeah, you communicated a lot, and it's just like I don't know, it doesn't do it for me.
I do like, I mean, this is where we see a lot of it too, right? Because I'm trying to remember if this is specifically to, we're seeing Jet again, you know, during the season after, like we saw him previously, I think, in this season, but yeah. Since what happened in season one, right, with Katara and everything. And, you know, Katara's big issue is just like, you're too much, dude. Like, and I think we start to see that a lot more from the rest of the crew. The rest of the crew kind of being like, I think Jet is just getting way too lost in this, which will lead to issues later. But yeah. I think we're starting to see that here, which that's something I do like. But yeah, like he's so eager to be like, this guy must hate Fire Nation. Let's recruit him. And it's just like, bro, you know nothing about them. Like,
yeah, that's what Smellerbee says. Smellerbee's like, you don't know anything about Lee. So why are you trying to recruit him to our gang? And plus, they're supposed to be going on the straight and narrow, but apparently not.
Yeah.
Could Jet ever? Like, once you've gone that far, like, once you're willing to drown a city full of people, like innocent people and like Fire Nation, it's like you're probably not going to go on the straight and narrow. Like you're, yeah.
Well, it's an interesting, you know, thing they're doing here without giving too many spoilers away for the end of the season and stuff. But like, I think there's a purposeful juxtaposition between Jet and Zuko, especially because of Zuko's journey, right? Like the idea of just like, where can your obsession lead you and what can it cost, I think is very much something that Zuko is going to be facing, you know, that's his character journey, basically. So, like, it's interesting to see that here, right? It's interesting to see that through Jet and, like, where that can lead.
Yeah, it's actually fantastic because usually Zuko and Aang are juxtaposed. So, like, Zuko's the darker side. But here we see, like, no, there's a darker side than Zuko. Like, Zuko is not the worst you get. Like, you get to, like, I want to drown innocent people. Like, it's not just, like, I'm stuck on one thing. Like it can actually turn to hatred. And I think that it's really good that we have Jet on Zuko's other side to show like that obsession even further.
Yeah. Have you guys talked about the Lee joke? That is this isn't a huge spoiler, but do you know about the Lee thing?
I don't.
You can spoil. This is a spoiler. Yeah, yeah. We can spoil away,
but I'm very interested to know the Lee joke.
So this is actually like, it's weird. Cause it's a throw. It's an eventual throwback. So Zuko being called Lee, right? That's the name he picks to when they go undercover. Flash forward to season 3. There's a point where Sokka wants to train and he goes to meet a swordsmaster and he has to give a fake name. And he does. And the swordmaster was just like, I knew you were in Fire Nation when you said your name was such and such. And he's like, next time, you know, give yourself a name like so, or Lee. There's a million Lees. And I love it because it is a perfect joke that when Zuko had to pick a fake name or whatever it was, like he was just like, oh yes, Lee, that's my name. And it's just like, oh, that's perfection, because it was like he chose the right name because he knew like that no questions will be asked.
That's hilarious. I've never made the connection to that one, but yeah, that is funny when the swordsman's like, yeah, you need to pick a different name next time. Wow. Wow. Deep knowledge of the Avatar. Perfect. The next thing we see is we go back to the outer wall, and Katara is like healing a member of the terror team. And I have to say that they are not very good fighters, but they are at least cut. These people, woo,
they are muscly, like Ty Lee said.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder too about the, like, how certain types of bending works, because I think a lot of the Earth Kingdomers are pretty jacked. Like when you look at Earthbenders, they are very ripped. And I wonder like how that translates through like the moving of the earth and having like that stability of movement that they do. But then I think that's really key, is because the series is really big on, it's not about your muscles. It's about your like strength of character and will, because alternatively you have Toph, who is not any of that and way stronger than any any of the other Earth Kingdomers, practically, save maybe Boomy. And it's interesting because I think there is that contrast, and you actually even see it with Zuko, because Zuko gets less jacked as the series goes on. And in season one, Iroh straight up tells him it's not about your muscles or your strength. Like, the fire comes from within. And another, like, again, like, character trait that I really love, they never state it, but if you pay attention, Zuko does get thinner throughout the series and gets stronger throughout the series. His strongest point is in season three, where he is the thinnest and not, like, ripped and jacked. Like, he's still toned, but he's lost a lot of muscle, but he's still extremely powerful. And I think that's such an interesting, again, character trait and journey. The show is very subtle with stuff, and I love it.
I never noticed Zuko getting leaner. I want to pay attention to that going forward in season three.
Yeah. Look at him in season one and look at him in season three.
I remember season one, he was pretty yoked. I do remember that.
Yeah, especially for, like, a kid. Like, when he was fighting Admiral Zhao, standing over him, like, built. I was like, wow. Yikes. These, I do feel like the Earthbenders are probably the strongest in terms of, like, just physical. Like, a lot of them are, like, very muscular. Trying to think if there's any, like, obviously Toph, but I'm trying to think if there's, like, another, like, random Earthbender that's just, like, not strong. I guess the Dai Li, they're not very strong.
Yeah, I guess they're more lithe than anything else, right?
What were the two guys trying to go after Toph? What were their names again?
The Boulder. The other two.
Not the Boulder. Master Yu and Jing Fu.
They're
not super strong. So I guess that they exist.
Yeah.
Anyway, this very cut man is telling them about how he got his chi blocked, how it was two people that ambushed them, and that the girl hit them until she could not earthbend anymore and then cartwheeled away. And Katara's like, oh no, this is Ty Lee. We are in trouble. Like, she knows what to do. And then she says the line that matters here. It's like she takes you down from the inside. And Sokka's like, yup, that one's it. Light bulb goes off. Like, he's got the idea.
Before we move too far ahead here, imagine you are a grown man and you get beat up by, like, a 14-year-old girl in a fight, and then she cartwheels away. That's, like, the biggest L you could possibly take, especially if you're, like, a soldier or, like, a military veteran. Like, ice, that's the fattest L ever.
Yeah, but, like, what an amazing peace out for Ty Lee. Like, beats a bunch of people and just, like, cartwheels off. I've often talked about, like, my fiance and a bunch of our friends have discussed, like, would you date a guy if he wore Heelys? And we had a long conversation about this. And it's like, depends on, like, if you're on a first date and dude had Heelys on, what would you do? It's like, depends on when the reveal happened. If he rolled up on Heelys, unlikely, because there's only a couple of guys who could pull it off. But if it's like the end of the date, you had a like really good time, and he's just like, well, this was really amazing. I hope to see you again. I'll see you later. And then Heelys off, you're just like, yeah, that works. And I feel like it's that level here, right? How you use it, where it's just like, you beat a bunch of dudes, just like, you know, later losers, and cartwheel away. A plus exit.
Yeah, I do not think that I would go with someone on the first date who wears Heelys, because that means that those are the nice shoes that they own. Like, otherwise, they're just in Crocs. Like, that's the only other shoe that they own. Like, I'm not opposed to it, like, once I know them. I'm okay to know they own Heelys, but on the first date? Ugh.
I love that. That's so good. They own the Heelys. Only go down from there.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but a cartwheel, I think that's a power move. I like that one quite a lot. The team after her decides, okay, this is how we're gonna do it. We're gonna take it down from the inside. So then we cut to they're all, like, on the, I guess, dirt. They're ready to attack the drill. Toph is gonna use some, like, cover. She's gonna generate some dust, and then they're gonna be able to get through. Ty Lee, who is now, like, on navigation's, like, oh, look at the dust cloud. It's so poofy.
Poof. Yeah. This is why having Ty Lee is not the smartest thing to do.
And the Fire Nation military, like, tacticians or whatever, I don't know what they're doing sometimes. Is this Azula's fault? Is this the general's fault? Whoever it is, what Ty Lee on navigation duty, awful decision.
Yeah, I mean, she does point out the dust cloud that matters. Like, she says, like, true. Hey, this is a dust cloud we should look out for, and she is right.
That's fair.
Yeah.
We're, like, trashing on Ty Lee. It's like, no, she was correct, though. It's like, that's fair, she was.
She was correct. She just did it in such a silly way. But then you have all these like randoms that are sitting there, like just, I don't even know what they're doing. It's like in Star Wars, there's always so many people on the bridge that are like pressing red buttons. And it's like, no, like you're not doing anything.
Playing Galaga, right? Like Avengers.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, so they say it's going to be nothing. And this is like kind of weird. They like create a hole in the ground. Toph goes into the hole. The drill goes over them. And as they're down there, Sokka complains. Sokka says, "It's so dark, I can't see a thing."
Oh no, what a nightmare.
The Toph blind jokes are killing me the past few weeks. They're so good.
This was the best joke of the episode for me, in my opinion. I really enjoyed it. This cracked me up.
I think seconded. This is one of my favorites. I love the running gag of everyone else saying something and Toph being just like, "I'm blind, yo." And just like, it's a constant thing. Like it's happened in a few episodes previously. It will continue to happen. It is one of my favorite like running jokes of the series. And this is like a great one. Just that like, "Oh no, what a nightmare. I'm sorry." Like it's so good.
Yeah. It's so funny. I think one of the best ones is when they're like all looking for the library and Toph's like, "Oh, look, it's over there." And they're like, "What?" And it's like, "Is what you'll say once you see it." And it's like, oh my God. It's so good. And then she does the like hands in front of her face thing.
One of my favorites, and it happens later. I think it's, I don't remember the name of the episode, but it was where they're running a grift constantly. And there's like a wanted poster. Real good. Yep. It's just like, "I'm blind. What's wrong with you people?" Like, it's just so good.
Yeah, that one is a good one. That's also a great episode. I really like that one where they're just like running a huge gambit.
Yeah.
Like con men. Ah, love it. But yeah, so then they all like get underneath the drill. They're trying to get Toph to come on there. And she's like, "No, I can't see. Like, do you not understand? Like, I'm not going in the metal monster where I can't see anything." And that's fair. Sarah in the Discord actually pointed out that her powers don't come from vibration seeing. They come from like the actual earth vibrations. Cause like last week I was like, "Well, why can't she see on ice if ice has vibrations?" But I think Sarah's right. So that's why she can't see in metal and ice. Like it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. She has to be in physical contact with the earth in order to see through that. Right. Like that's where she's able to sense stuff. It's like, it's that specific surface. Like how bats are able, like their sonar works because they're bouncing stuff off of things. Like hers is specifically by able to touch the earth. She can sense everything around there. And through that is like the medium. She can't do it through air. She can't do it through metal yet. It's really cool. And instead she just decides to stay outside. And once again, just beast modes. I'll just try to slow down this thing by myself. Cool. Like,
it's like, okay, well, no one else could do it, but you actually have a shot. So I guess you can keep going. But once they get into the machine, they're trying to find the schematics and Sokka's like, "Okay, we need to find the weak points. We need to know what this looks like from the inside." And he like decides to cut a steam valve so that there's like some noise going on. Aang doesn't see the plan, but this is pretty smart. So one of the engineers has to come to fix it. And once they do, they go and they come with some plans. And Katara just uses the steam to freeze the guy. They walk with the plans. This is iconic. This is like a great heist. 10 out of 10.
I thought this was a very impressive feat of water bending from Katara, too. Just instantly freezing all the steam. I wouldn't have thought that was like something water bending could do. But then, I guess steam makes complete sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably pretty advanced, but she's also a master, so.
Exactly. And, like, that's the other cool thing, too, is, like, again, seeing these characters train and become just arguably the best versions of these benders in the world. Katara's a great example of that, because she does stuff with water that's incredible. And we see a little more usage of that as the series goes on. Certainly in the last episode, there's one point in the big fight in, you know, finale where she freezes and then uses like her own breath and steam to like melt the ice around her so she can get out of it. This is like a great example of her thinking about how to use like water in interesting ways.
Yeah, it is really cool here. I think that this heist that they do here, even though it's smaller, is better than the one last week where they go get the food from the captain, or like Lee and Jet gets the food from the captain. This one's like so clever. It's so clean. It's so like, it's just in and out.
And one I never would have thought of. Like, it's so, it's, it again, Sokka's cleverness is on the forefront, and I love it because it really is just like, well, we need to figure out what this place looks like. How do we get plans? And he's just like, oh, well, if you break something, an engineer will probably show up to fix it. So we'll just get it from him. And it's just like, oh, yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so here, hot water is that engineer's downfall. Sadly, hot water might also be Iroh's downfall. We go back and see Iroh and Zuko. They're sitting around waiting, and there's like a little guy who's like hawking tea. He's like, hot tea, finest tea in Ba Sing Se. Iroh gets a cup, but he's very upset. He says it's the coldest tea in Ba Sing Se. He says it's an absolute disgrace. Is cold tea that bad? Like, I'm not a huge tea drinker, but like, you can drink it.
Yeah, cold tea kind of sucks, unless you're drinking like an iced tea. I don't know. Like, a tea that's meant to be hot and then is cold is pretty bad.
Yeah. What do you think, Kevin? I can agree there. I'm not a huge tea drinker personally. Like, I like coffee, but same principle. Like, sure. You can have hot coffee if you want hot coffee. You can have iced coffee. I think an in-between part, you're just kind of like, what the? This is not great.
Okay, so room temp is no.
Yeah, room temp tea and coffee, no.
Okay, good to know.
It's a weird taste.
I will not go down the streets of Chicago trying to hawk some room temp coffee. And I will strike that from my weekend plans next weekend. Good to know. But then, so Jet is like trying to talk Zuko into joining his freedom fighter group. He's really persistent, and Zuko's like, I'm not going to do it. Like, I said no. He's just like, I'm not going to. Jet keeps persisting. It's like, Jet, he said no. Like, you're not going to win him over right here.
Yeah. Like, again, Jet's persistence on it is extreme. And then naturally his reaction once, to be fair, Iroh does something real dumb. It's, again, Jet is a bit much when it comes to this stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, Jet goes from 0 to 100 real quick here.
Yeah.
But then also, is this the stupidest thing Iroh does the whole series? Is this like the dumbest stunt he does? Because this is batshit insane. Why would you warm up your tea in the middle of, and you could see him like look around before he does it too. Because I watched episode twice, and then on the second watch, I was just watching Iroh in the background. So he looks around and then heats up the tea.
That's awesome. It's such a small detail. See, this is why I love the show. Like, it's so good.
But then he must know that there's people that could be watching. It's a densely populated area of like refugees going into the city. So I don't know. This was like the dumbest thing I seen Iroh do all series.
Yeah, it really is not that smart. And like here, Zuko gets mad at him. I think Zuko saying, "Why are you firebending your tea?" is also pretty dumb. I know he whispers it, but like, even saying the words is just like inviting someone to be like, "I'm sorry, did you say firebending?" What?
No, I said like, Meyer Mending. What?
if that joke was in there, I also would have found that joke very funny. That's my type of dumb humor. But yeah, so then like Iroh gets upset. Zuko knocks the tea out of his hand. He wants to cry over spilt tea. But yeah, Iroh's clearly in the wrong here. Then we go back to Sokka and Katara. They're looking at one of these like massive beams. The plan is to the plan is to take the beam, cut the inner mechanism from the outer mechanism, so then the inner mechanism isn't braced anymore, and then the whole thing will collapse. They get to one of the beams, and like it's huge. These things are like gigantic. It's going to be like pretty hard for them to get through. And so what Sokka and Katara, not Sokka. Sokka does nothing. What Katara and Kang do?
He's a motivator. I don't know what you're talking about.
He provides moral support. Yes. That's what he does.
I think he provides rage, if anything, because
he induces rage. Yeah,
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 you're right. But so the plan is to cut through the beams, and then like they'll be able to make them fall apart. So they start doing this. It's like it takes them a lot of time. This does not look easy. They're also using like only a little bit of water. Is there any way that would be better that they could break these beams? Like, could they use ice or something? Would that have been better?
I really don't think. I mean, because you'd have to get it to like sub-zero temperatures in order to be able to shatter a beam like that, even with the ice. I feel like this really is the closest thing they could probably have done. And yeah, it would take a while because like you're essentially just trying to cut through metal. It's like in movies when you see people at the bank vault, right, with like the little flamethrower, and it's like, this is going to take a bit. It's very similar to that.
Yeah, it's got to take them a long time to do this. This looks exhausting. Like, I know that this is like kind of what lumberjacks do, like if they're like, you know, using an axe or whatever. This would be like one of my least favorite jobs. I could not do it.
Yeah, lumberjacks are also lumberjacked, so they're able to do that pretty easily. And I feel like, you know, Skinny Aang and Katara are very toned, but not this to go this long and this hard.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. Then they knock through, they like cut through one of the beams, and they think that they've won, which is like just so sad because they like hear a big noise and they're like, oh, we did it. Like we went ahead and we like knocked it down. And then the message comes over. It's like, we did it. The drills made contact. Yeah. And they're like, okay.
Sokka just way too optimistic. He's just really excited where he's just like, I did it. My plan worked. And it's just like, yeah. What? No, bro.
How can you think breaking one of the braces would shut the whole thing down? Because wasn't the plan to knock down cut down all of the braces? I don't know why he was assuming that they would
walk. I think the loud noise probably is just, he's like, oh, that must have done it. Yeah. Good enough.
One cool thing I like here, when they say start the countdown to victory, they cut to Azula and she's still like unhappy. She knows that the battle's not won yet, which is a nice little detail. There,
Sizzle is perpetually unhappy.
True, that too. Well, but I mean, she does smile on occasion.
Even like getting through the wall is like not even the goal. Like even if they do that, it's like, great, we've done one of the things I'm going to do. Like I have bigger plans. Like you just know your one thing, but like Azula's a mastermind. She's like thinking three, four, five, six, seven steps ahead,
and she learns because after this entire encounter. How does she take down Ba Sing Se? From the inside.
Ooh, smart, Kevin. I wasn't even thinking along those lines. Look at that.
Yep. But anyway,
so amazing.
they tried to like push the brace down or something. Like this just looked terrible. If they thought that like, you know, busting the braces was going to work, like how are they going to push them down? Like, no. No.
To be fair, we always have to remember they are young, so they're working with what they got here.
It's only Sokka trying to push the brace down, right? It's just him, so.
Yeah. And then Aang is like, actually, Toph's been teaching me you don't need to give 100% every time you fight. And then he just like uses Sokka as like a dummy to be like, here, I'm going to prove my example. He's like, you're going to be quick and accurate. He just like hits him a bunch of times. He hits like Sokka. And then he's like, and then when he's like reeling, then you deliver the final blow. He hits him on the head and Sokka just plummets. Poor Sokka. Like being used as a prop sucks. Well,
to be fair, Sokka did just have them do all of that work for quite some time. So, you know, he had to get his hands a little dirty in this moment. That's fair. True.
And Zach, as the resident coach expert that we have here, is this good advice? Should you give 100% on every strike?
I think it's pretty good advice. I mean, Aang is going to like modify Sokka's plan here, and Aang's plan eventually does work. So, yeah, this was good advice from Aang, I think.
Okay. Good to know. I think this like makes sense. Like, you know, don't give it all your all, so you have more to give later.
Exactly.
But yeah, so the plan now is to, instead of cutting all the way through, they're just going to like weaken each brace, and then they're going to use like a needle or a nail or something, and like destroy the whole thing at the very end.
Yes.
And then they're like, great, it's going to crash down. Aang's like, the whole world's counting on us, and Sokka's like, minus the Fire Nation. Yes. Correct. Like, thank you.
Yeah, like, why bring that up?
Yeah. So then we start like seeing them cut them a bunch, and they're cutting through a bunch of like these braces. We go back and forth going through a bunch of them, and just then we get some random person running up saying like, oh no, an engineer was ambushed and a brace was like cut through on the starboard side. I don't know if it's left or right. Do either of you know?
No.
Starboard.
I know there's a starboard and there's a port.
Yeah, no port. Yeah. Starboard. That's it. I don't know if it's left or right either. I'm not any sure.
I don't go on boats.
If I had to guess, I would say port is left, but it's also a 50-50 guess. So if I'm right, it's not that impressive.
What's the term for the people who like stay on land? Landlubber or whatever? Something like that. That's what lovers. I am.
I'll be that one. Yeah. Anyway, so now they realize like there's something going up, and Azula's like, all right. This is time. And May's got to be stoked. May's like, thank God, more things to do.
I do like the general of the ship. Like, this is where you see his face just like, ooh, because that's the moment where he's just like, well, I'm dead. Yeah. I think, you know, to our point earlier, that's the moment he realized he messed up real bad.
I would hate to be Azula's underling, because then you're just like on, it's like walking on eggshells. Like apparently people who work for Elon Musk at Tesla say like every time he comes into a room and just like fire random people and just like you always
have to
be.
Compare Azula to Elon Musk. That would ruin her for me. Come on, what are you doing? I love this character. What are you trying to do?
No, but I just mean like in a workplace, like I would hate to be working underneath Azula because it's like the fear of either being fired at best or like death at worst would be looming large over you.
There's no good outcome there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd rather be fired than die, but
yeah. The boss of one of my competitors at work, like he has a story, there's a story about him where like he came into a room, got mad at someone and took a keyboard and just smashed it until like it was totally broken and then fired a bunch of people in the room, which just sounds so funny. Oh man, I would not want to be there, but I would love to see it, just to like see someone with that much rage in real life. Like I've only seen this in TV shows and movies.
Yeah, it definitely seems like something was just like, that's like a parody, but apparently not.
Nope. Yeah, it's just the crazy ones. Anyway, so now, yeah, this actually, I think this is where Sokka's like, okay, good work, Team Avatar. And he says the name here. And just as they're about to celebrate, a gigantic blue, like, fireball comes shooting by their head. And it's like, all right, it's on. This is great. And the rest of the episode's, like, action-packed, super exciting. But yeah, we get to see Azula and her blue fire blasts. It's very fun.
Yeah, this is where the heavy action. Like the entire thing is like an infiltration action scene. And I love that this entire episode is basically like a scene, right? Out of like, yeah, like will feel like a bigger context, but it's just really well done. And this is like where the action starts. And we do get that beat also where it's just like Ty Lee's just like, it's the Avatar and friends. And I'm just like, Sokka waits. Just again, that's why the Sokka is likable, because even in this instance, he's like, oh, hey, what's up? Like, you know, like he's never not on, which is amazing.
This is the thing that my sister, when we were watching, latched onto this the most. She was walking around. She was like, hey, just like waving at different things. And I was like, all right, if you're going to be Sokka, this is good. I like it. Yeah, Sokka's just so endearing here.
Yeah, and this is like where the really big fighting starts. You get like the split up, right, where Ty Lee and Mei go after Sokka and Katara, and Azula's obviously going to go after Aang because she also has a pretty one-tracked mind.
Yep. Yeah, and then so as they're running, like Katara and Sokka are going into this like sludge, because like as the drill's drilling it, like the rock mixes with some water and it just turns into like nasty, like sewer type stuff. It's like gross. I guess it's just rock, so maybe it's not that gross, but it looked pretty nasty.
It just looks like mud and water.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess like Ty Lee doesn't really care. She goes right in, but Mei's not about to. Would you go into the sludgy sludge juice, as Mei calls it?
No. Like I said, while I'm not fully like Mei anymore, the little character traits is still the same. Do I want to get dirty? No.
Kudos to Mei though for having the cojones to like step up to Azula and just not do it though. Because like I would be too scared of Azula. I would jump in if Azula's like jumping in the sludge. I'd be like, okay, well I don't want to get like obliterated by Azula. I'd probably just do it. But Mei's just like, no, she holds her ground, just doesn't.
Well,
do it, so.
as Mei herself says later on, that is a miscalculation on Azula's part about how much she thinks they're afraid of her.
Yeah. For some reason, Mei's not afraid, because if the option was like gross rock water or like Azula, I would take the gross rock water, even though it's like very nasty. But
Mei
holds her own.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they start going down. We see Aang's like racing past people. I always love these things where like Aang's racing through places because he just runs so fast. Like he's
like the road runner. Yeah, I like it too. Aang was zooming through the drill here.
These are some of the really fun parts too of like the bending. I love when they get to use it. That's another thing I like about this episode is like seeing Aang's showcase of airbending. We've seen it a lot throughout the series, but this is just such a like one moment in particular, just really awesome. But like, yeah, using air to just essentially like speed run his way through the entire drill to get to the top of it is so awesome and so fun. And it's one of those moments where, as much as I am a firebender, I'd be like, yeah, airbending would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it would be pretty fun. Although then if you're a firebender, you can do the cool like Azula jetpack type thing.
Bullshit.
Oh, that's so cool. I want to do it. Then the another really clever thing is like, so Katara and Sokka slide out through the back. They go through the butt of the ship and Katara starts using water bending to stop the flow of the rock water from coming out. And then like Ty Lee, as she's like falling out, then is just like trapped and is like just staring at them, unable to do anything. That's some really quick thinking by Katara's part.
Also just like really gross for Ty Lee. I mean, I know like she didn't mind, but just imagine just being like now stuck and they're just like, ah! You
know? Yeah. Yeah. That's gotta be nasty. And then Katara is like a little vengeful here. I know we get vengeful Katara later in season 3, but here she's like, why don't you try blocking my chi now, circus freak?
Yeah, kind of like, mean.
Oh, oh yeah. Zach, was this a line too far?
I don't know if it was too far, but it's like, I mean, I guess Ty Lee has like taken her out before. She's pissed off. But yeah, it seemed like a little harsh. Circus freak.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, I thought it was a little rude, but
big oof.
She was flirting with her brother, though, so it could be also a sibling thing.
A little protection there. That's yeah. I do think that Katara would be very protective of Sokka. Like if Sokka was getting taken advantage of by some girl, Katara would be like, no. Yeah. You're not doing that to my brother. But then, yeah, so Sokka's like super excited that this pressure is going to build up in the drill and it's going to pop. So everyone will get some soda at the end.
Yeah, when it explodes, soda just rains out from the from the drill.
Dr. Pepper, 7-Up, ginger ale, whatever you'd like.
What is Willy Wonka in charge of this drill? What the hell's going on here?
Correct. Yes, instead of a chocolate river, it's like a rock
soda.
Yeah, and then like it's just soda everywhere. Exactly. That is precisely what I meant. Then we cut to Aang. He's on top of the thing and he's like on the drill running. He's trying to get them to stop throwing the rocks down because it's kind of making Aang's life hard because he has to, you know, move out of the way of getting crushed. And so he's like yelling up. He's like, hey, stop throwing the rocks down. And the general's like, hey, keep throwing the rocks down.
Never stop throwing rocks.
And the rocks are not doing anything. That's why I think the general is such an idiot, because the rocks are providing no resistance at all. They're just getting broken. It's just like, and you're at that point, you're just wasting Earth. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was like, yeah, the general is kind of a dumb here.
Yeah, but not as dumb as Sokka is. We go back to Sokka and Katara, and Katara says, so Sokka's like, keep it up. Like, you can do it. Don't forget to breathe. Mansplaining breathing.
Yes.
Okay. And Katara's like, look, I'm sick and tired of you. You're a chattering hog monkey. Sokka says, just bend the slurry, woman.
Just bend the slurry, woman. I wrote that down, too. I was like, what a line!
When I heard that, I was like, I hope that like Toph heard that and just like earth bending blast you into like space and you have to fall. Like, that's so rude.
It's very rude. It is something I would say to my sister. Like, I wouldn't ever actually say it or mean it IRL, but if I was talking to my sister, I would like say those type of like, you know, like jokey kind of like, I was like, hey, you know, type things. So I could get that. But yeah, I like that Katara herself just like immediately like, you know, water bends him to be like, yo.
It's funny, in the middle of this action-packed episode we get this like sibling spat pretty much. Just, there's a little like argument between the two, Sokka and Katara.
Yeah, this used to happen between my sister and I would like mess with her a little bit too much. Like for some reason my sister's knees are very ticklish, and so I just like go and I just like tickle her knees just like the littlest amount because it'd like freak her out. And then she'd like get really upset with me. And then she would essentially water bend me into the ground. She would just like tackle me. And then I'd be like, damn, all right, don't mess with her. She's just, she's able to take me down. But anyway, the sibling rivalry felt pretty real. But then Toph like rolls up. And now because it's rock water, Toph's also able to bend it, which I guess makes sense. Maybe.
She's bending the rocks in the water, not the water itself. And then Katara's bending the water. So
because it's basically what Katara would have been doing is using the water specifically to like keep the rocks up, so constant motion.
Okay.
Whereas like with Toph there, Katara could just worry about the water and Toph could worry about the rocks. So it just makes things easier because each is doing half the work necessary.
Yeah.
Okay. Never give 100% when you can give.
Ooh. It makes sense. And you tie it back. This is great. Wow. Okay. I buy it now. We go back to Aang. Aang is like standing on top of the drill and he's like, what I would give to be a metal bender. And I was like,
foreshadowing.
I was like, that is foreshadowing. I like this.
Definitely foreshadowing.
Yeah. But then Azula and Aang start fighting and this fight's pretty cool. This is a good one.
I love this fight. It's awesome.
What are your favorite moments as they're like fighting each other?
Easily. Okay, so there's two specifically, right? Like, this fight is just really awesome because, again, like, it shows the skill and abilities of Azula, and especially just fighting on top of this thing while boulders are falling around them. The two moments that I love are, one, where Aang, like, earthbends and tosses a rock at her, and she just does a split to duck the rock, and I'm like, incredible. And then the other part is where she essentially does that like rolling flip cartwheel into a drop kick.
Iconic. I have that in my notes. It's like a front flip somersault in midair, firebending drop kick. Yes. That was my favorite part as well.
Incredible.
Yeah, and that's the move what she takes out Aang with, because she like drop kicks and like firebends at the same time. A drop kick that will put like any WWE wrestler to shame, pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. I know like Simone Biles recently did like a very impressive flip. I don't know all the gymnastics terms, so I'm not going to like embarrass myself guessing them. But it's like, it was a very impressive flip, and like it was something that's like not always like done because it's like very difficult. I feel like here, like Azula is doing everything that like our best gymnasts can do. It was very impressive, all the flipping. The other part that I like is like, so Aang's like using water whips to like stop her fire attacks. And as she's sending more fire, I like the water's going down, like the water's like getting vaporized. And I was like, that's clever, because like it's just boiling. Like I was like, wow, this show is good. No wonder we podcast about it.
It's so great. And that's the little things, right? The little details in the fight of like, again, Azula needing like get rid of his water so that way, you know, like he won't have that. He's down one element because he is the Avatar. And that's what I love. Like, you have Azula doing this fight, and you also have the showcase of the different fighting styles, because, you know, each one of the bending is based on a different type of martial arts, and I think that's so awesome. So you see that in movement and motion here, as Aang is using several, and Azula is using firebending, you see the contrast of that happening. And I also really love that the fact that, like, at this point, too, the threat of Azula has been real. Like, she's holding her own against the Avatar, and almost every instance previously, they never finish the fight. Like, it always gets interrupted or something happens. Like, the chase is another awesome one where, you know, she was fighting essentially several of them and they fight didn't end because, like, it got interrupted because everyone else showed up. And I love that. I love that, like, the danger of Azula is always prevalent and, like, they never really finish the fight between them because it's kind of evenly matched for now. And I really love that aspect.
And it's evenly matched with Aang, like, master of airbending, like, really good waterbender, and a really good earthbender. Like, he's using lots of earth here, too. He's got three of the four elements, and Azula is, like, keeping up with him. It's very impressive fighting here.
Yeah, that just shows how powerful Azula is. The fact that she can keep up with Aang. Like, Azula is, outside of, like, Ozai, she is, and I guess Iroh, she is the most powerful firebender, probably, to ever exist, almost. Like, even the lightning bending. Like, the fact that she can bend lightning at age 14. She's a 14-year-old girl. That's always what's crazy to me. She's canonically age 14, and she can do all this stuff. That's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And pretty much the only reason why she doesn't just like capture the Avatar is because the sludge is like really beginning to build. And it's like building so much to where they have to stop the fight because they both get like knocked down from it. And as they're like going down, they're falling. Azula has some like badass shoes, like nothing like Heelys, that stops her from falling. It like gets enough traction. Pretty nice. And then Aang, you know, has trusty old Momo there to save him.
And then does the run up the edge because he's like, once he's back up, like mostly upright, he does his like airbending to run up the edge. And then arguably one of the, I think it's just the coolest moment probably in this episode and one of the coolest airbending moments about to happen.
Yeah, this is my favorite moment of the episode as well, where Aang hops up the wall and just sprints up the wall and jumps down. It's so impressive. Just I love airbending in the show in general. Just like the way they show the airbending, it's just beautiful to watch, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he like, so he gets like a nail in the X that he marked. He like uses his air scooter to get up, but his air scooter runs out. So he keeps running. And then he's like, all right, now time to run down. And like, he's got to be going past terminal velocity because he's like actively running down a wall somehow.
It's and it's not only just that, cool. He's using the airbending burst, right? Because he uses the air to go up there and he basically burns out all the air in the ball to get as high as up as possible because this is obviously a giant wall. And then, like, you know, has that moment. And the musical cue here is A+. Like, when the music kicks is, like, exactly when he does the turn around up in the air and then just bursts downwards. It's like a superhero moment. I love, obviously, superhero stuff. And it just felt like one of the coolest moments for, like, the Flash, except it's Aang doing it. And it was just such a cool scene.
Yeah, it is really cool. And as he's, like, falling down, Azula, like, shoots some sort of, like, fire blast at him, but misses by just a bit. And as, like, Aang falls down with so much pressure, it, like, sends everything back. Not only does he knock the drill, but he creates, like, a ripple blast that knocks her back. And, the slurry or sludge or whatever it is, like, starts to burst. It goes away from the drill, and this drill is down for the count. And thankfully Toph is there with Katara and Sokka because she's able to like create a rock pillar.
Yes.
Otherwise they would be totally filled, or like just covered in all this slush.
Yeah. Toph perpetually helpful. Like, what is it? I think even in season 3, we're so glad we added you to the team.
I forgot about that line. You're right. They do say that.
Yeah. That's, it is extremely clutch here. But yeah, so then like the drill's beaten, you know, they've done it. They have broken through the wall. But I guess like they don't have a way to keep going. And then I love this, like after they're all like, you know, at the end of the episode, they're all like seeing where all the characters are and Mei just opens up a little door and she's just like, we lost.
Yeah.
And that's all we get from that.
I do like even in that moment after in the loss though, Azula like slides down and like and even in losing, Azula still looks cool. It's just like it's an impressive landing. always.
Yep.
She doesn't even seem to be mad that she's covered in sludge and all that. She just still
minor
elegant and graceful.
And graceful covered in sludge.
Oh. Yeah. That would not be me. But then just a few more things to wrap up the episode. So they're going to Ba Sing Se on the train. And as you mentioned earlier, Kevin, they are like using the earth bending to move the train, which is like just such a cool detail that they use it to like get the energy. It also makes so much sense. And here we see like Jet, who's like now convinced that Iroh and Zuko have to be firebenders because he heated the tea himself. We also see like Iroh meet the mom and see Hope, the baby. What do you feel about these moments where it's like a random connection that doesn't need to be in there? And it's just like, oh yeah, like we saw these people last episode.
I love it. I mean, I love these tiny moments, right? Because it's the world is more connected than you think. And just also like while all this was going on, while all these various threads are happening, I think it's interesting to see like the after effects and aftershocks of it. It's like when Toph met Iroh, right? Like it's just such an interesting moment. It's just such an interesting cross. And then obviously had no idea who he is and, you know, for a bit still didn't. I think those things are really fascinating and interesting. The way lives intersect and touch in this world, I think are important. And that plays out hugely throughout, you know, the themes, of the series, especially like when you think about the past lives and stuff like that.
Yeah. Zach, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I enjoyed this moment of the baby and everything coming back. I have a question for you, Jacob. Did you enjoy this moment? Because the way you worded the question, you didn't seem like you liked it too much.
Jacob's like, I hate this. I hate babies. I hate this.
Well, okay, so I wasn't a big fan of like, or it didn't do anything for me seeing the couple in Zuko alone that we saw have the baby. Like that was like, whatever. This is like kind of nice because it's like, okay, we see that they're on the train going to Ba Sing Se. I just know I had to mention it because last week I was like a little probably too upset about it. So I feel like I had to at least mention it.
It's just a cute little moment between Iroh calling the baby handsome and what's the couple's name? Ying and Hope. That's Ying, the baby's.
Yeah, I don't know the guy's name.
I don't think he's given a name. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Then we finish off the episode with Sokka saying, good job out there, Team Avatar. He gives a few names. I think we should power rank them. So he gives Team Avatar the Boomerang Squad. Then he explains this joke very thoroughly because it has Aang in it. The Aang Gang, the Fearsome Foursome. Which one do we like the most?
Boomerang.
Boomerang Squad. Okay.
Boomerang Squad.
It's great because it has Aang in it. It's very clever. Also, it's the best weapon in the series.
I like Aang Gang, actually. That's not bad. I like the rhymes.
Aang Gang?
Yes, I mess with it. It ain't too
bad. I think Team Avatar would be second for me just because it is like, I know them as Team Avatar, so it's endearing, but the Aang Gang's good. Fearsome Foursome's the worst one.
Yes, I agree with you. Fearsome Foursome is number four.
Not about it.
Yeah, I suppose they could call themselves a Fantastic Foursome, but they probably would have had issues with naming.
I would have loved that if they were like, right? We could be the Fantastic Four, and it's like, we don't have the rights to that. Like that.
Yeah. That's like an Animaniacs joke rather than an Avatar joke.
I do wonder, because like I was actually discussing this with my fiance earlier, where this is definitely the first time it's used in series is Team Avatar. But Team Avatar is huge in the fandom. It's actually not used that much within the series. Like they mentioned that they call themselves Team Avatar, like I think once or twice more, like a few, but like not a lot. But it's used in the fandom like nonstop. Like that's what they're referred to as. And I'm wondering in my head, because like, is it one of those instances where the fans were already calling them Team Avatar and they brought it into the show? Because that's happened, I think, in other stuff.
I think it has to be, because like it's so convenient to refer to like, oh, Team Avatar or the Fire Nation to like say what they're doing in season one. It's like, oh yeah, Team Avatar is doing this, Team Avatar is doing that. Like, I don't remember. I was like quite young when I was watching this. I was not plugged into the online community, sadly. But I have to imagine they were called Team Avatar.
Yeah, it's really interesting because she brought up too that like for Buffy, for example, it's like they were called the Scooby Gang, like way before it wasn't in the series. And then because it's so popular in fandom, they brought it into the series, which I think is really interesting. Or it was a writer's room thing and they brought it into the series because they're like, yeah, let's make this happen.
Yeah, yeah, I that's probably what happened. You know, we could also like try to find out more about that. But, you know, I would say it's likely at least. But yeah, so that's the episode. That's the drill. A very fun episode. Lots of action, lots of stuff. Yeah. Kevin, what are your thoughts after recapping it?
Yeah, I mean, I really like this episode. It's just such a great showcase, I think, of the characters in subtle ways. I think you get the Team Avatar thing, which is huge. You get Sokka's, like, being the idea guy. You get the awesome action scenes. There's just a lot in this that I really like that feels like such a different episode almost from, like, stuff around it, because it is just, this is, like, a single scene. It's like, there's like a book that's escaping me right now. I think Joe Abercrombie wrote it, where it's like the entire novel is just one battle. And I think that's really cool. Like when you do, it's a fantasy story, but it's like, it's really cool. I think when you have an entire novel, that's just a scene out of like something really bigger. And that's sort of like what this episode is. And I found it really cool and fun because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Zach, what are your thoughts on the episode?
Yeah. I love this episode. I mean, especially coming off the backs of the two slower episodes we watched, it's great to have Azula back. We haven't seen Azula for a couple of weeks. And just the whole one big action sequence, I loved it. Just the fact, like Kevin was saying, how it's just like one scene by itself, and yet it's still able to fill up 22 minutes of airtime and not feel paced at all. So, yeah, I loved it. What about you, Jacob?
Yeah, I think this is a good one. You know, I think it's like even better in a rewatch because it pairs well with the Serpent's Pass, because like you have that episode where like there's some action at the end, but then like it leads right into it. And I think it's like a really fun episode with just like all of the fighting, so many good characters. You have some like decent jokes in there. I think this is a great episode. So let's go ahead and jump into our episode rankings. As always, you can write into avatar@postshowrecaps.com. with your ratings for the episode, rating between 0 and 4 cabbages. Zach, do you want to start us off this week?
Sure. I'll give this episode a 3.7 out of 4 cabbages. I enjoyed the fights. I enjoyed the humor. I enjoyed almost everything. The B plot with Zuko and Iroh was a little, I don't know. I was like, kind of like tired of Jet in that moment. I like Jet as a character, but Jet was just kind of, like you said, he was like a pest. He was kind of like annoying this episode. So that knocked the episode down a couple of points for me. And I don't like stupid Iroh. I like intelligent, wise Iroh. You know what I mean? I don't like dumb Iroh heating up tea. That just makes me sad. So yeah, I'll give it a 3.7 out of 4.
Yeah. Solid episode. Kevin, do you want to go next?
Yeah, that's actually almost spot on. I was going to give it a 3.8, 3.8 cabbages. So I really liked it for all the reasons before. And I think like Zach, I think that's the point two parts, right? Like, I think the Zuko and Iroh parts aren't as strong, especially considering all the other stuff happening with those characters this season. So like, I think that's where it maybe faltered a little bit, but overall, I think 3.8, it's such a well done episode.
Yeah. I'm at a 3.7 myself. I think this is like definitely an A episode. Like, there's so many good things. We get so many characters, a lot of action. The B plot's like, but also you need it because like those characters are going to be in Ba Sing Se and they are going to have stuff to do. And so like, yeah, you know, it's kind of like a necessary, not even evil, like a necessary like movement along. The listeners were a bit lower, but not too much, at a 3.53. Yeah, I think that there are some people that were rating this episode pretty high and then a few like middling ratings in there. I feel like this is a one that is known pretty well. So, you know, 3.53 is pretty good from the listeners, leaving this at a 3.68 total ranking. Not pretty bad. Good.
That's one of the higher ones for season two, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Especially coming after the past few weeks, it's been a bit lower. But there you go. That is our drill rating. Now we're getting to the battle of the battles. We're doing the same thing, but for the fights. And the whole back half of the episode is kind of one fight. So I think we should just call this the drill fight and then rank it instead of like putting the parts together. So, Kevin, do you want to start us off? What would you rank the drill fight?
Out of four cabbages?
Out of four cabbages or four elements, maybe, is more apropos for the fighting.
Man, that's really tough. I would actually, you know, I really love the fight, but if we're looking at, like, there's the Azula and Aang fight, which I think is really good, but if we're looking at it overall as, like, one of the fights of the series, I probably don't rank it as high, just because of those elements, pun intended. I'd probably give it three. Just because, like, for me, like, with the things that are missing is, like, the fight doesn't end, right? Like, it gets cut off, basically. And you don't fully get the fights with, like Mei is not involved. You don't get Ty Lee heavily involved at the end. And Toph and Sokka and Katara aren't as involved in the fight as more so, like, serving, you know, like, helping bring the drill down. So, like, those parts of it don't, like, measure up to, like, some of the more legendary fights in the series. Like, if you ask me, like, the chase, I keep bringing up because that's the other episode I really love that came previously. That fight for me is a four, because you have Zuko versus Azula versus Aang versus Zuko versus, you know, and then you have the Katara show up and you're just like, this is incredible.
Yeah, that fight was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zach, where are you on this fight?
Yeah, I think Kevin brought up a lot of good points. I'm a little higher. I'm giving it a 3.3. I love Azula and Aang locking horns. I think that's always very fun. So, yeah, I'm at a 3.3. I wish it went on a little long. Like, I wish Azula and Aang were, like, fighting a little longer. It's kind of like a Deus Ex Machina with, like, the sludge coming in and knocking them both out. It's like, I want to see them fight even longer. But, oh, well, what can you do?
Yeah, especially go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, Aang and Azula don't really have, like, a big final battle. They never really get that deciding battle, really. So
yeah, I was gonna say, especially like when Aang takes that rock and becomes like half the thing, as he has like a bunch of rocks on his arm, like I wanted to see that play out a little bit more. I think
in the final episode, technically, right?
That is
he goes full thing very briefly.
He does go full thing. I think here I'm gonna give this a B, a 3.2 out of four elements. I think that this is like, you know, the type of fight that I like to see. I think that there's a lot of good things, but I also would like to see like a little bit more interaction from other people. It is so fun when it's like, oh, this person's fighting this person, and then this person comes in, and like people are constantly coming over the top of each other. But I also really just did enjoy it. This is leaving the fight at a 3.17. Yeah, not too bad for the fight. And those are our rankings. Last thing we have for you this week is listener feedback. As always, write in at avatar@poshorecaps.com to write in your listener feedback. We'll start off with Maria. She writes in with some meta commentary. She says, even without knowing who Mei and Ty Lee are, the Terra team is screwed as soon as two people were sent to take them all out at once. Anytime you see fighting in a large group and the enemy sends one or two people after you, you know you're done for, because they're so confident these two people are strong enough to beat you. This was like, this made me laugh when I got this in my email. Accurate. I started laughing and I was like, oh yeah, that's 100% right.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's great. I love that.
Yeah, Maria's so just spitting facts.
Yeah, someone should have just been like, oh, we need to leave. This is not going to end well for us.
The problem is the grunts that they're fighting never would have the like mental awareness to be like, oh, we're screwed. Like they just sent one person to fight 20. Like we are in trouble. But it's definitely true. Zach, how many people do you think you could take out if we sent you out against everyone?
Oh, zero.
You couldn't take down the whole Terra team at least?
No, of course not. I'm not that yoked. And nor do I have I wish I had Ty Lee's powers of paralysis. I don't have that. I don't really got magic hands. I got nothing.
So all you have to do is cartwheel away and you've won.
Yeah, I can't even cartwheel. I'm way too fat to be cartwheeling about. Hell no. What about you, Kevin? You think you've taken out any members of the team?
Oh, yeah. I get all of them for sure. totally.
Sarah wrote in and she asked, have you ever flirted with someone to get past some rules? We see Iroh do this here where she flirts with the person. Have you ever had any successful flirting stories?
Oh, so you add successful in there and that ruins it.
Have you had any unsuccessful?
Have I tried? Sure. Have I tried? Absolutely. Was I successful? No. I'm not very good.
That's fair. That's probably where I am too. Another thing she writes in, she said, I wish Jet discovering their firebenders led to Jet's redemption arc where he realizes that not all firebenders are evil and gets a second chance and all. What would you think if we had like some sort of Jet redemption arc? Would that work for you?
Yeah, I would have really enjoyed a Jet redemption arc. Because then a couple episodes from now, Jet just gets bodied. He just dies. And I feel like he has such
I left it kind of ambiguous.
I guess, but he just dies in such a sad way, in my opinion. So that's one thing I've always thought every time I rewatch, I'm like, I wish they kind of gave Jet. I know there's a lot going on with Zuko and Iroh and Aang and the Team Avatar, but I kind of wish they gave Jet a little redemption arc rather than just having him pass away.
Yeah.
For me, I actually prefer it this way because, like, to me, it is that it's the Zuko thing, right? Like, I think this is how it had to end for Jet because if you give him the redemption arc, I think you lose the power of Zuko's. So I think, like, having this end up this way, I think it's a key showcase to be like, this could be, you know, you depending on choices you make.
Yeah, I also think like he just seems cool. Like I would like if they like sent him off in the sunset and like we realize later like, oh, he actually turned out good. Like even if it's not in the Avatar show, like I just want it for him. Like he just, I want him to be okay, but he's not.
Choice. He just chose not to. His teammates kept being like, dude, let's not do this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's just so sad. Poor guy. We had some people in the Discord asking, do you recommend the Serpent's Pass should be watched in tandem with the drill? Do you think these episodes pair well together or should you watch them one at a time?
Netflix certainly does. Yeah. That's what I was confused when trying to find this episode for a moment where I'm like, I know this episode. Where is it? It takes place here. And then I saw that, like, I Googled it and Reddit's just like, look at the Serpent's Pass. And I was like, oh, 47 minutes. Interesting. So Netflix certainly thinks so.
You know what's weird? Canadian Netflix has them separated. It's only an American
once
Netflix
again,
things.
Canadian Netflix doing things right. Canadians in general doing things right.
Yeah, it is. So they did like air at the same time as like a special. So like it does make sense that they're like together, I guess. But yeah, last week I was like, okay, what have I done wrong? I know the Serpent's Pass is next. Like I know this show. I could not find it. And then I realized that I was just missing something. But I think that it makes sense to watch them together because I think it goes right from the drill at the end, right into it. You get this whole action sequence of the drill and it feels like a nice event. Other question, which do you prefer, Jet's hook swords or Zuko's dual swords?
I mean, I'm a sucker for swords, so both are awesome. I probably just go Zuko's though, cause I'm also a traditionalist, but, the hook swords are pretty dope.
I like the hook swords a little more because I love the scene of like Jet in his eponymously named episode, him like hanging from the tree and like alongside Aang and like him fighting. So I'll go with the hook swords. Why not? You could break the tie.
Yeah,
Jacob.
I think the hook swords are pretty cool. Like the way that he like uses them to like throw stuff and like swing on vines. In the Jet episode, he almost like keeps up with an airbender. Using these hook swords.
In the
like,
tree.
He's
pretty
agile. Yeah.
Isn't there a thing, too, where they... Is it this or maybe a different movie where it's like because like someone hooks them together, but then uses the one of them to like swing the other one, and it's like that's so cool.
I'm fairly sure this is it comes up later.
Later,
I think when they're fighting, he like swings it around. Either I've seen the same movie as you, and that's like what's in my head very vividly, or it's this. I'm pretty sure it's this. We'll see. I think it's in like 2 weeks is my guess.
Yeah. It's in a big action scene that happens.
Yes. Yep. Rudy asks, why doesn't the Dai Li fight the drill? And to that I say, there is no drill in Ba Sing Se.
Correct. That is the answer. Nice.
Why don't they come and fight? Like they can't be bothered.
Well, I mean, the Dai Li specifically is one, a secret organization, right? So you can't have them out in public like that. And two, like, I think specifically they exist to serve the protection of the emperor? King?
Earth King?
Earth King?
Yeah, King. King. Earth King, right? So I think, like, they serve a very specific purpose. So I think dispatching the Dai Li would be weird, especially if the Earth King is like, hey, where's the Dai Li? And the answer has to be, like, busy? Like, because, you know, they can't certainly tell him why, what they're doing.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Okay, and last question from John. How different is this episode if Toph already knows metal bending?
She just takes out the drill herself easily, honestly. That's a very good question, because it's a very different episode. Toph just destroys the drill, and then that's it.
Yeah. Sometimes I get these questions, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, that is actually so smart. Like, this episode is just totally different. Like, yeah, how does it play out, Kevin? It's just, like, over in 5 minutes?
I think it would be over a lot quicker, certainly with the getting the interior messed up. I do like the series in that, like, she doesn't immediately become, like, you know, beast level or metal bending because it's new. She literally invents it. Whereas with earth bending, she is practiced and trained and is godlike level. Even as the series goes on, and by the end, she's still like she's clearly incredible at metal bending, but it only goes so far because it's brand new and she's still like working on pieces. Now, of course, you compare that to like where we end up in Korra, and that's completely different because like now it's a huge thing. I definitely think it's easier. I don't think it's like done in one library style, right? Not like I just stopped the drill single-handedly, but I think it makes everything a lot easier if she could.
Especially the cutting of the metal. Mm-hmm. It's just like, all right, you're cut and you're cut.
Yes.
And it's just like, all right, this did not take like Aang and Katara doing like CrossFit for hours to cut it. But yeah, also to speak to your point about Korra, I think it's so cool in the Avatar universe. Like, so they learn metal bending here, and then like in Korra, like it's like a pretty common like tool people have. It's like it's very cool. Like that's how knowledge works in real life. Like people don't know like math or science, and once they know it, they can teach it way easier. And like watching Korra and like knowing about like the human colossus of knowledge, I'm just like, wow, knowledge is cool.
Yeah, especially considering what I believe Lin does with a piece of metal against a bad guy in Korra. You're just like, oh, damn, which is like, what a scene.
Yes. Yep. That very cool. We'll talk more about it.
Your podcast.
Yep. You can watch Korra yourself and we'll talk about it later. It is amazing. But anyway, yeah. So there you go. That is the listener feedback. Some great questions in here that really just make me just be like, oh, yeah, that is totally right. thank you so much for writing in. We really do appreciate it. That's all we have for you this week. We can just start wrapping up the show. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on. This was like an absolute blast.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I mean, I really, really love the show. I would love to come back. There's certainly episodes I would love to talk about. And this was a blast to be able to come back for this, especially since the last time I was on here, it was for a different type of experience. It was the Avatar live action movie by M. Night Shyamalan. This was so much fun.
We had to make it up to you by coming on something that's, you know, somewhat decent in the Avatar universe and not coming on for what is the garbage of that movie.
That's the worst movie I've ever seen.
It's really, really.
I don't think there's a movie I've seen that was worse than that. Because then there's movies that are like bad, but you can like ironically like them. And then there's no ironic love to be had for that movie. It's just awful.
Yeah, yeah. Especially because there's so much genuine love for the source material. Whatever.
Oh, yeah, genuine love.
yeah, sure. Yeah, it's all right. I'm not upset about it. It's fine. But yeah, again, thank you so much, Kevin. Kevin, where can people check out everything that you're doing?
Oh, man. So you can follow me on Twitter at Kev Mahadeo. You can check out my website, themahadman.com. And you can absolutely find me all over the Post Show Recaps Network, mainly on the main feed. I can be found doing Everything is Super with Josh Wigler, in which we are recapping currently the Chris Reeve Superman films. We were doing all four Chris Reeve films as we take the gap between Falcon and the Winter Soldier and the upcoming Loki. We are hitting Superman 3 is out. Superman 4 should be hitting your airwaves soon. And then we're diving into the world of Loki, which we're really excited about. Beyond that, you can also find me on the Mighty Ducks Game Changers podcast that I host with Melissa Woodward, where we're recapping the Mighty Ducks show on Disney Plus. We are heading into the final episode this week, which we're really excited about. And that's for the patrons of Post Show Recaps. You can check that out there. And then some more fun stuff to come after that. And of course, all the crazy, crazy D&D stuff going on. We just did an episode of the Community D&D game. You can find as part of the Community podcast. And of course, the regular D&D that happens all over the Discord. So quite a few things happening, quite a few things still coming. But yeah, that's just some of the places you can find me.
Yeah, I'm super excited for Loki, but the Superman stuff has been a fun stop. Have you ever heard of the musical It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I was in it when they did it in Dallas. It was one of the children. I was just like one of the like newsboys when he goes to the orphanage. I was like standing there. That was wild. It was so fun.
What an experience that must have been.
Yeah, crazy. But yeah, Superman's super fun. So I'm glad, you know, you stopped in the world of Superman for a bit, but lots of fun stuff going on there. And then Zach, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at ZachMuhammad32. Yeah, I'm just tweeting mostly about the NBA playoffs. That's the majority of my Twitter.
Yeah, the NBA playoffs are actually pretty exciting. I'm not a huge basketball fan, but it's fun stuff happening. And it's fun to like be able to see your Twitter and be like, oh, yeah, I know what he's talking about. Go basketball.
I would not.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. People can find me on Twitter at JK Redman. I'm also podcasting about Scooby-Doo on the Brazilian Dragon podcast with Felipe Shimon. So check that out. We have lots of fun talking Scooby-Doo movies over there. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting Team Avatar Podcasting or Boomerang Podcasting. No, it doesn't work.
Which you can support further if you go to postshowrecaps.com/ATLA and leave us those 5-star reviews. We're close to 50. So let's get to 50 5-star reviews. Let's do it.
Perfect. Yep. Thank you so much. Until next week. See ya.
Peace out.
Bye. Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.